Speakers, publishers, consultants, coaches, and info marketers unite. The Speaking of Wealth Show is your roadmap to success and significance. Learn the latest tools, technologies, and tactics to get more bookings, sell more products, and attract more clients. If you're looking to increase your direct response sales, create a big-time personal brand, and become the go-to guru, the Speaking of Wealth Show is for you. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Marilee Kern to the show. She is president at Kern Communications, and they specialize in marketing and PR. Marilee, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. I'm well, thanks.
Good. Give our listeners a sense of geography. Where are you located? I'm guessing San Diego.
I am based in sunny San Diego, but we have clients all over the country.
PR, and I guess I should call it by its proper name, public relations first, it's such an, I guess, more of an art than a science. Maybe you'll disagree with me there. I'll give you the chance to address that one. But there are so many things, there are so many media outlets. People have such mixed experiences with PR firms and publicists. I'd just like to take kind of a deep dive into some of the best practices and hear about what works and what doesn't work. What are some of the most effective PR strategies?
Well, I think first it's understanding that PR is really both an art and a science. There are creative elements involved with every campaign that really starts with conceiving a campaign strategy, you know, an approach that will resonate with the media. It's timely, it's relevant, it's compelling, you know, so that involves much creativity. And then, of course, once you've decided on the direction of the campaign, typically you'll have to write up some kind of campaign vehicle, whether it's a press release or a pitch letter. And for me, at least, writing is very much an art form. And, you know, there's a tremendous amount of skill involved with how the information is presented, how it unfolds, what would be relevant to a journalist, you know, writing a pitch letter versus an article, for example. And then, of course, the science of making sure the precision of your media targets is on point, your news distribution platforms, you know, and all of these just sort of logistical issues. So it really is both. So understanding all of the facets and elements that go into conducting a successful campaign is, you know, fundamental.
What are those elements? If someone comes to you and says, okay, I have a book that I want to market, or I have a podcast that I want to market, or any type of thing like that, professional practice, whatever it is, what are the elements of a good public relations campaign?
At a super high level, and we're talking kind of your basic grassroots campaign, fundamentally you have the continuum would look like this, where it starts with typically a meeting with the client. There's this discovery period where you're gleaning all of the information that you can about the client, of the brand, the product, the competition. I call that discovery. So it's that initial research effort. You check out the website, you read business and marketing plans, you peruse the marketing materials, all of that. From that discovery effort comes this sort of brainstorm effort. Okay, here's what I think are compelling approaches for a campaign, you know, as far as angles or a premise, what you're really going to hang your hat on for that particular campaign. Maybe a new research study has come out, you know, a news report. You know, pegging things to hard news is really a good idea. So, you know, we'll take a look at the news landscape, what's going on current event-wise to, again, timely, relevant, and compelling. You always want to keep those three things in mind. So you'll agree with the client on what the approach will be. Once that is in place, the publicist would write the campaign vehicle, and depending on which direction the news is going, it might take the form of a press release, which typically would be a harder news angle, or a pitch letter, or maybe it is an article you're looking to get placed verbatim, whatever it is, the writing effort would ensue. Once the vehicle's in place, of course, the client has the opportunity to review, edit, and approve that. Once that's done, you're ready to what I call trigger it. And actually, in tandem with the writing process, the publicist would be custom compiling a media list. Journalists across all suitable mediums, you know, print, online, broadcast, radio and television, you know, whatever's appropriate for the campaign. They'll be custom compiling their list of targets, you know, who they are planning to distribute the news to. Once all of that is in place, the publicist would then, whatever distribution platform they use would disseminate the news to the media. And at that point, you know, you're serving as the publicist for the brand or the product or the expert. You're serving as the liaison with the media, hopefully setting up interviews, providing high-res artwork, you know, facilitating review samples, whatever is required. The publicist is managing and massaging and facilitating all of that. And then just generally staying on top of the media that had expressed interest. Maybe they already have interviewed clients. Just trying to keep tabs on things, trying to bring the media placement to fruition vis-a-vis, you know, the interview, if it's broadcast, it actually airs, or if it's print, it actually ran. And then on the very back end, trying to procure copies of the placement that was successful, you know, whether it's a PDF print placement or an MP4 file, if it's video. So from end to end, soup to nuts, that's sort of what a baseline campaign would look like.
When you talk about news releases, do news releases need to be relevant to something else in the news?
No. I mean, there's plenty of campaign premises that, you know, are just maybe, for example, it's milestone-based. A company, maybe it's mid-year, they're going to do a second quarter, they're going to announce various milestones. They have new hires, they've achieved different revenue milestones, but, you know, but in this sense, it's all about the company. So no, it doesn't necessarily have to be pegged to any external idea. It's not a bad idea.
It's good if you can, though, right? Because you talked about it being topical and relevant.
Exactly. I find that it's advantageous to, if you can peg it to something that's, you know, relatively high profile or certainly relevant within the industry, you know, that that client operates. You know, if you can find a current event, because again, an editor wants to know, not that an idea isn't good, but they want to know, why is it good right now? Why should they give this issue coverage right now? So that best prepares you to answer that question.
I think it's difficult for a lot of people who are thinking about their own PR strategies, entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, publishers, who are thinking about how to get good PR for their business and get exposure. It's hard for them to think of how to make their content relevant. Can you give any examples or suggestions on how to think in that way? Because it's good if it's relevant, like you said.
Well, I think, again, just going back to what we were just discussing, you know, most obviously, to make it relevant to something that's going on in the news right now, you know, always great if there's statistics involved, if it's pegged to some kind of new research study or finding, because that will give it recency, it will give the experts commentary, you know, it'll give it relevance and it'll put it in context, and you can even, you know, look at it from different angles that way. So, I mean, that's really the best way to do that. You know, trying to take an idea that you have and spin it in a way that really hasn't been discussed in the media. You know, some ideas are just over and over and over, and many experts operate in a really noisy space, meaning there's many experts that all have publicist representation, you know, that are out there pitching. So, you know, the key is to really, and sometimes it's a contrary point of view, something that's, you know, kind of goes against conventional thinking. I find that that's a compelling way to get the attention of a journalist, especially in a really crowded space.
That contrary point of view and being controversial, I guess that's a good way. What about something that would be called, I doubt you call it this, but I'm going to use the name I know, a publicity stunt? You know, any ideas along those lines? Like, I've thought of maybe challenge an established thought leader if you've got a different opinion, things like that. Are there any good ideas along those lines?
I mean, not that that has not been employed successfully many, many times over the years, because it certainly has. I find that there's a tremendous amount of cost involved. Typically, there's a tremendous amount of risk involved. You know, sometimes, you know, just the inherent nature of a stunt, you know, could be perceived negatively by some, and sometimes that's a good thing. But, you know, I just find the risk reward value, again, especially of, you can expend, you know, the time and effort and budget to plan it and execute it. And there's, you know, as with anything in PR, though, you know, there's no guarantee that coverage would manifest. So, you know, it has to be really calculated and weighed. And I'm just more a proponent of, you know, the more traditional approach, and not really relying on gimmicks and that kind of thing.
Maybe that's not the right word, but a publicity event maybe is a lighter, better word for it. I don't know. I just want to continue down this vein. So what about distribution services? We see online all the time where there are all these websites out there, and most of them are hokey, of course. I'll distribute your news release to 1 million outlets and blah, 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 and nobody will ever see it.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about distribution. So we've got, say in the example, we're talking about news releases and articles and so forth. We've got something written. It's a quality piece. It's got an angle. It's maybe got relevance, hopefully, to something external to it. What do we do with it?
Well, there's two things you would do with it. All of my campaigns, at least at a very basic level, I always execute a campaign via email to the list of media contacts that I've custom compiled. These are journalists that I have a personal relationship with. I know that their beat is germane to the subject at hand, you know, the nature of the campaign. So I personally execute via email always, you know, try to get it in their inbox and have that, you know, direct one-on-one communication. The wires are what I like to say good insurance, you know, is good as media lists are, for example, and if you don't already have pre-established relationships with journalists like I do, maybe you're newer to the game, or for whatever reason you're using, you know, a media database.
Or a wire, when you say the wire is a wire service. Yeah.
Well, no, right. I'm going to get to, not quite, I'm going to get to wire in a minute. I'm talking a media database that will allow you to email, you know, your news via vehicle direct. That's basic.
I just wanted to distinguish for the audience, a wire, you mean a wire service. I just wanted to...
Yeah,
you know,
I don't.
That's like lingo, yeah.
A wire service would be different than a media database. So a media database, it would be their direct contact email and that kind of thing. In addition to that, though, when to issue over the wire is a bit of insurance because, you know, when you're emailing direct with a journalist, like I said, the whole nation potentially is pitching them. Their inboxes are packed. You have a very difficult time maybe of getting noticed. You really have a subject line to compel them to open your piece in the first place. So a wire service is nice insurance. You know, journalists are registered with the wire services. They get proactively pushed news that they have specified is of interest to them. They proactively look to the wires for headlines. And, you know, journalists know that wires are not cheap or inexpensive, so they know that a client that's issuing news over a wire tends to be maybe a little more credible. They obviously have budget. They have enough budget to afford the wire at least. You know, so even that kind of intangible, unspoken image-wise...
It's a vetting. It's a vetting process, yeah.
Exactly. It reflects well. So, and again, it's just, it's another touch point. It's just another... You want to maximize all chances that your news is actually going to be seen by the journalists that are relevant to that. So, you know, to approach it both through email and the wire is optimal. You know, clients don't always... Because wires really are expensive. They charge by... the number of words with a 400-word minimum, you know, and it's not inexpensive. So sometimes clients do just, you know, they have to forego the wire and they'll opt just for email. And you can be perfectly successful at that. I'm just saying it's optimal to do both.
When you do a database, you, of course, like any good PR person, you have your own email list that's, you know, probably resident right on your computer, just your usual email box of journalists that you know that cover certain beats and so forth. And then there are database services like Vocus, and I think Business Wire, PR Newswire has one. I know they merged. There are other services where you can just sort of buy access to a database and call through it and send things to who you want. But and then there's the wire service. So maybe there's sort of three grades or categories of getting things out there. But when you do your own custom list, how big would that list typically be when you would send an email to a bunch of journalists? Would it be 20, 50, 100, or thousands?
That's a function of how you, you know, the nature of your contract with the client. Is it a local regional campaign? Is it national? Is it international? And it also depends on the industry. You know, if you're pitching a medical device, you know, that list will inherently be smaller than if you're doing a lifestyle piece or a travel product, you know, which has, you know, there are a tremendous number of journalists that cover a travel beat, for example. So there's so many variables that would factor into that.
There is no average, in other words.
There's really not, not at all.
What else should people know?
Well, again, I think, you know, they say a publicist is only as good as their last placement, and it really is important to find out, you know, not that a publicist had some success last year, and they, you know, typically they'll show you their portfolio. You know, you want to see what a publicist did last month, and typically, you know, they'll be able to show you that. They'll have tear sheets, they'll have links to footage, they can obviously provide client references, which is incredibly important. And I have to tell you, I would say the majority of my client base, which is pretty substantial, I've been around a long time, but the majority of my clients have come to me having had a really bad experience in the past with publicists. They've sort of lost a taste for it, and I've sort of had to, you know, redeem the profession. So often there's, you know, there's very little accountability. It's not like advertising where you pay and there's your ad.
Pay for play.
Yeah, it's very subjective, and it does require a tremendous amount of skill and forethought. So you really want to know that the journalist is you know, still skillful today, last month, as they were however long ago. So it's really important to check, you know, those references and do a little diligence when you're hiring a publicist.
Speaking of which, what is the best way to work? I mean, I know, you know, many years ago, some PR firms started working on a pay-for-play type of scenario. So it's more like that advertising model where the client, when they get placement, then they pay, although those prices tend to be pretty high for those placements, or just, you know, the vast majority of the industry is on an hourly rate. What advice would you have on actually working with and engaging a PR firm?
Well, you know, what the marketplace needs to understand is PR is subjective. It's exactly what I just described. There's unfortunately zero guarantees, and I can't tell you how many times I've been in a prospect meeting and I say, look, I'm just going to shoot straight. I cannot guarantee you that this campaign is going to be a success. I could show you how my writing samples, I could show you placements, you know, from a month ago. I could, you know, prove to you that I have all of this skill and knowledge and contacts, but at the end of the day, I cannot promise you that this campaign is going to resonate with editors and manifest in coverage. It's just not the way things work. So I'm always wary, and I tell them to be wary of publicists who do make those kind of promises, because it's downright impossible unless they, you know, are making side deals and actually paying, you know, for placements. So, you know, with that said, it's that much more important that the client does do that diligence and, you know, does check out the writing samples and make sure that they've had some success within the industry that client operates and that kind of thing. And all of those things being there, you know, you're comfortable, the references are good, the writing is there, there's placements proving that they're still in the game right now. You know, you do have to go on a little bit of faith and have that conversation. Okay, well, worst case scenario, what if this this campaign bombs? You know, is there any recourse? Can we shift gears midstream? And, you know, so you want to sort of anticipate that and sort of figure out how you might deal with that situation even before you've retained the publicist, so you don't find yourself in a sticky situation later.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. Give out your website, Merrily.
Sure. It's www.kerncommunications.com.
Good stuff. And I just wanted to ask you before you go those questions, any favorite book recommendations so that people can learn more about PR and become more astute at the whole process?
Well, rather than books, I'd like to give out resources. You know, there's just certain tools that are out there for publicists that I have had some of the biggest placements of my career manifest, and there's two specific resources. Rather than books, I'd rather give out online websites. One is helpareporter.com. It's referred to as HARO, and the other is Profnet. They're both similar, and these are journalists that will be proactively looking for experts or products, or they have a bona fide assignment typically, so you know you're that much further in the game, and they are looking to be pitched on whatever the topic is, and it will be specified. And these feeds come through, they'll cross your desk multiple times a day, and you have the opportunity to jump on these opportunities. And at that point, they're already vetted, real editorial or broadcast opportunities. So, you know, every publicist in the country needs to be registered with those two resources.
Okay, great. Well, hey, Merrily, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Copyright the Hartman Media Company. For publication rights and interviews, please email media@jasonhartman.com. This show offers very general information. Opinions of guests are their own. Nothing contained herein should be considered personalized, personal, financial, investment, legal, or tax advice. Every investor's strategy and goals are unique. You should consult with a licensed real estate broker or agent or other licensed investment, tax, and/or legal advisor before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed. Please call 714-820-4200 and visit www.jasonhartman.com for additional disclaimers, disclosures, and questions.